Coming up on Tech News Today, stop Microsoft, you're killing them! And from Sharp Minds, maybe comes Apple TV, plus the death of screen reflection. Maybe. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 21st, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT6. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell your iPhone, iPad, iPod, or Android smartphones from your home or office so you can get the latest versions. Get a risk-free quote that's good for 30 days at Gazelle.com. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continual, and unlimited backup for your computer files for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use promo code TNT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us, why did you say like, what's
I don't know.
You're just feeling cheery.
Yeah, sometimes they're just like different inflection.
How dare you be chipper?
My immediate reaction to you being cheery is being suspicious. Why is that?
I don't know.
Also joining us today, Peter Rojas, co-founder of Gadget.com at GDGT.com. Welcome back to the show, Peter.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us on such a hot day in New York. What is it? It's like 1,000 degrees there.
Yes, I'm melting.
We will. Hopefully you're in some air conditioning, yeah?
Yes, though. I have the door closed so that there's not too much...
Too much noise. That's always the problem.
The AC is really loud.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, we'll whip through the tech news in a nice, cool fashion that will breathe.
Because we said that it will be.
Sarah Lane, still in London. The web is over. So what's going on
there
now?
Well, it rained today. If Pete wants to feel any worse
about
the weather.
You're talking about the weather.
Right, exactly. No, actually, I'm kind of just here for the next couple of days before I officially go on vacation on Saturday. But it's lovely in London. It's a lovely city, and every time that I go to a bar and hang out on my iPhone like this, which is how I usually act in San Francisco, more people than usual come up to me and say, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What is that?" It's great.
That's good.
It's a good conversation starter.
And then you talk really loud because you're American. All right, we've got a mystery to solve. Who's going to murder screen reflection and RIM? But first, the top 10 stories of the day in the news. Many current Windows Phone users are not satisfied with getting Windows 7.8 as an upgrade instead of Windows Phone 8 when it comes out this fall. A user named Luke actually shot off an email to Nokia's Stephen Elop and AT&T's Ralph De La Vega asking why he should stick with Windows Phone since he's only getting a, quote, skin with the new live tiles. Elop responded saying existing Lumia users will get, quote, the most significant visual elements of Windows Phone 8. And express Nokia's commitment to a long-term experience for Lumia users. There you go. Your move, Luke.
TechCrunch reports that Apple is working on replacing the iPhone's 30-pin port, which is a standard since the third-gen iPod, with a 19-pin port, according to sources from three independent manufacturers, unnamed, of course. Along with the MagSafe 2 port and the new MacBooks, it seems that saving space is a top priority for the next iPhone as well.
Motorola Mobility is trying to end its dispute with Microsoft over several patents by offering a settlement. Look at that. Moto's deal would require the company to pay Microsoft 33 cents for every phone that uses Microsoft ActiveSync and would require Microsoft to pay 50 cents for every unit that uses Motorola technology related to video compression. Motorola also wants 2.25% royalty on the cost of the Xbox. Now, Microsoft doesn't seem impressed by the terms, saying Motorola is asking for rates higher than market.
I feel like the patent wars are winding down, though.
Slowly by slowly, the major players are having peace.
The much-maligned ACTA copyright treaty may be winding down, too. The International Trade Committee in Europe, made up of members of the European Parliament, voted 19-12 against the treaty. That's 19-12. That means the committee's formal recommendation to the European Parliament will be to reject the treaty. The Parliament is expected to make its final decision in early July.
A team from Duke University's Pratt School of Engineering has developed a 50 gigapixel prototype camera, which is, wait for it, 50,000 megapixels. Actually, it's 98 cameras synced into a single device. It's about 2.5 feet square, 20 inches deep, and could be used for, say, military surveillance, at least at the offset. The Duke team received funding from the United States Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, aka DARPA, for the project.
Now we're getting close to that idea of just taking pictures of everything all the time, and then you go back in and pick your pictures out with that kind of resolution. That's crazy.
Sounds like fun. A report from the Chinese news site 21cbh.com says Foxconn will receive parts from Sharp in the third quarter of this year to build the mythical Apple HD TV. Now, Sharp is rumored to be the display panel provider. The report says the panels were expected in the fourth quarter, but this earlier timing would allow the Apple HD TV to be introduced as early as the end of the year.
A big yacht is good enough for most people. Sarah doesn't want anything more, right? Right, Sarah?
No, certainly not. But I mean, why would you?
Not enough for Larry Ellison. He just bought an island, a Hawaiian island. 98% of the island of Lanai is owned by billionaire David Murdoch, and he's been losing money on it. I guess he gets money from hotels and stuff. But Oracle CEO Ellison has agreed to buy it for around $500 million. We're not sure exactly how much. I don't know. Maybe there are patents hidden in the volcanoes.
Maybe he's just going there to cry over the Google thing.
I need
to
know.
What was funny about it, it was, you know, when I was looking at Twitter today, everybody was like, Larry Ellison has better things to do than buy Lanai. But it was already owned by somebody. So it's not as if he started the trend. He's taking it over.
He didn't buy it
from
the natives.
Right, exactly. I'm going to do my best impression of most of the stuff I saw for about 5 hours on Twitter. You guys ready?
Okay.
Twitter's down. Twitter's down. Are you seeing this?
Were you seeing it on Google Plus? This? Is that what was going on?
No, I was seeing it on Twitter because it was
in between.
Intermittently. It was kind of interesting. You know, everything that happens in London seems so far away. So, yeah, Twitter was down today, and you probably noticed it. It was down for about 3 hours, and here's why, in Twitter's own words. Today's outage is due to a cascaded bug in one of our infrastructure components.
Oh, well, there you go.
A really, really good explanation, and I'm glad that they cleared that up.
Yeah, the cascaded bug infection is always a real problem, you know. Google introduced endangeredlanguages.com, a site that aims to contain over 3,000 languages that are currently threatened. According to the site, there are 7,000 languages currently spoken, and about 50% of them are expected to be lost by the year 2100. You'll be able to see a dedicated page for each language, as well as view sample videos. Now, Google plans to hand off the project to the First Peoples Cultural Council and the Institute for Language Information and Technology in just a few months.
First found last week in an XDA developers forum post, it looks like the next version of Android will be called Jelly Bean, as we all suspected, and will first make its way to the Galaxy Nexus HSPA Plus. The information was found by going to the Google Play Store, going through the checkout process. The bigger news is that Jelly Bean would be Android 4.1, a point release, not version 5.0, if this turns out to be true. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor before we get to our discussion section and dig into these stories a little deeper. Squarespace.com is the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. I use it for my books. I use it for swordandlaser.com. We got George R. R. Martin, so we wanted to have the best-looking freaking website possible. When you're going to have a guest of that caliber, Squarespace provides that. Great templates, easy way to edit things and update things, embed things. If you know some CSS and HTML, you can dig under the hood and mess around with it, but you don't have to. You can just tweak their templates with the WYSIWYG text or the WYSIWYG tools that they give you and make a great-looking website. But listen, this is the best time to get a Squarespace account during June. When there's not much June left, so hurry up. Sign up for a new account. Annual plans get you the best deal. You get a free domain name, absolutely free. No hassle of going to a registrar. You get to keep that domain, by the way. Lowest price that they've ever offered and an additional 10% off. Squarespace now offering free domain registration to all annual plan customers. That's completely integrated within the sign-up process. Doesn't cost you anything extra. Squarespace recently reduced its prices. They're now offering plans as low as $8 a month. And Squarespace gives you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. For example, this means 10% off the first month if you get a monthly plan, or you save more if you get an annual plan. You get 10% off the entire year. Here's what you do. Go to squarespace.com. Don't give them a credit card information. Don't give them anything. Just make the name of your site. You can use one of their tools to import your current site just to see how it looks. Your data is not locked in there, though, so you've got data portability. No risk. If you do decide to keep the site, Use offer code TNT6 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. And don't forget about the free domain registration with the annual plan subscription. That's squarespace.com. Offer code TNT6. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's start off digging deeper into the stories with this Windows Phone discussions that have been going out. We actually have a little bit of a leak of some of the phones from HTC. According to Chris Ziegler at the Verge, their sources are telling them that there will be three HTC Windows phones. We all know Nokia is going to make these phones. We're going to see new Lumias. The HTC Rio would be a 4-inch WVGA phone. That would come in October. The HTC Accord, 4.3-inch, gig of RAM, dual core, 8-megapixel camera. That would come in October. And the HTC Zenith, a 4.7-inch phone with a 720p screen, 8 megapixels, HSPA+, quad core. None of these phones are LTE. Peter, what do you make of this? If this ended up being true, are these the kind of phones that can do anything for HTC, especially in the Windows Phone space?
You know, I think it's going to be tough because, you know, it's clear that Nokia is the premier partner for Microsoft with when it comes to Windows Phone. So I think that there are, you know, Nokia's getting a lot of the preferred efforts in terms of engineering and things like that. It's been really tough for HTC to sort of stand out in general lately. They're kind of in Samsung's shadow when it comes to Android phones, and now they're in Nokia's shadow when it comes to the Windows phones. So I think it'll help. I mean, I don't think it's any surprise that they're doing a bunch of Windows phones, and these sound about like what they would release, just given, you know, how phones are progressing and things like that. So it's going to be tough. There's going to have something really special about these to make them different, and I'm not necessarily seeing that, but we'll see.
I'm just thinking, like, I'm looking at the spec sheet. It kind of looks like, okay, HTC already had these parts with their Android phones. They're like, what else could be run on this? And finally, Windows Phone can do that and take advantage of a multi-core processor and higher res displays. So it's maybe, yeah, HTC, like Peter was saying, they're not making a mark against Samsung, really. Maybe they could become legit number two when it comes to Windows Phone devices because, I mean, Samsung's just, you know, running away with everything. Why not? Because HTC's had some really interesting designs, and they've really, you know, pared down their lineup. If they have compelling products first in the market, it could be interesting.
You know, HTC's relationship with Microsoft is really interesting, right? Because they were the first partner, you know, for Windows Mobile, and they were sort of the premier Windows Mobile partner. And then when they saw that Windows Mobile wasn't going anywhere and was having a lot of problems, they kind of, you know, shifted to Android as their primary focus. And now that Google has bought Motorola, they're really worried about Android. And now that Samsung is dominating, you know, Android with the Galaxy series, it's like HTC's kind of the odd man out right now. And it puts them in a really, really difficult position. The good thing is that they're so focused on design and on crafting great handsets that I think that, you know, their really strong focus on design is sort of, you know, their secret weapon, so to speak.
Sarah, do you think these will be pretty enough to turn your head?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I'd like to, you know, have a little bit more information on pricing, but I think that Pete's right. HTC is not the dominant Android player right now, so you've got the Microsoft Nokia partnership, but HTC certainly has space or room to grow as far as Windows Phone 8 is concerned. And it looks like, at least when you look at these specs on a piece of paper, they seem like nice phones. You got to a higher end quad core. That's something that Intel accuses Android phones of not really being able to handle, even though they say that. So I'm interested to see what consumers think.
Yeah, I think HTC's problem right now is standing out. And Peter's right. They can stand out on looks. And that may be enough. The HTC Rhyme got a lot of attention, and it wasn't because of its specs. So we'll have to wait and see what these phones look like, see if these specs are actually the specs. But all of us are sort of reacting like, these are nice phones, these are good specs, and I kind of feel like they need something a little more if they're going to get back in this game and not just be settling to be number two.
And one of the things that made HTC stand out for Android and Windows Mobile in the back in the day was they were skinning their versions of these things, and the fact that Windows Phone is really, I mean, it's really specific. It doesn't seem like something that needs a skin because of their revamped interface. Same thing with Ice Cream Sandwich. The fact that the lead that HTC had really was not just the design, but they had good software that made somewhat, you know, ugly products look really good. But now that the software is good enough to look pretty on its own, they're kind of stuck because everyone can have the same interface.
Mm-hmm. CNET also reports that Huawei is going to come out with Windows phones. And this is not a leak. This is for sure. The Ascend series, which they're actually showing off Android versions of that at the Mobile Asia Expo. But they'll be making Windows Phone 8 versions of the Ascend series. And those will be released whenever Windows Phone 8 is released, coming first probably to prepaid carriers in the United States and also to Europe and China, with other markets to follow after that. Now, there's also some talk out there, Sarah, that Windows Phone is dooming BlackBerry.
Yeah, so we talk about Windows Phone as just sort of like it's on the up and up. Can it catch up with iOS and Android? But what we don't talk about all that much is how it might actually be putting RIM in its grave. And Ars Technica had a really interesting article right up today about the fact that, listen, Microsoft is flooding the market with Windows 8 phones. Meanwhile, RIM is laying off thousands of workers. And actually, the market that RIM has is really the market that Windows Phone can thrive in, not only because they can thrive in the enterprise, but because RIM is weak. Enterprise server was always the big reason that BlackBerry had so much success in the corporate world, right? Administrators had a huge amount of control over RIM devices. But RIM has had a terrible year. I mean, I don't really have to go probably into too much detail because we all know BlackBerry 7 phone sales have lagged. RIM turned over their co-CEOs. They got a new CEO who said, we're doing too much. We got to focus back on the enterprise. BlackBerry Mobile Fusion Management Platform, which was, of course, the next evolution of enterprise server, was supposed to sort of win over the corporations that were letting employees use iOS and Android devices because that's kind of what's happening now. That's the trend in corporations because they know that people don't want to just use RIM devices. So we're sort of in this age where it's like RIM is trying to evolve with the times, but RIM is on a decline. Their numbers continue to keep going down. Meanwhile, Microsoft has its own management platform called Sys12, kind of the same thing, management capabilities for iOS and Android. Windows Phone 8 will have Office Suite, which is something that a lot of corporations obviously have. So it's like, hey, if people are used to having a bunch of programs on their laptops or, you know, their desktop machines in the office, and then the administrator or, you know, a corporate dev can port over a native app for Windows Phone 8, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense for corporations who might have been, the way I see it, is kind of on the fence about RIM. Should we stick with it? Should we not? I don't know. There was some news that came out earlier today that RIM says our first BlackBerry 10 devices will not have physical keyboards. We will be rolling out physical keyboards eventually, but that's not what the first devices will have. Now, I don't think that means that, you know, RIM's out of the game. Obviously, Windows phones don't have physical keyboards either. But I feel like it's kind of a good turning point for a company who's like, you know, maybe it's time to move on to a new evolution, the software that makes the most sense for us, because RIM is just not what it used to be. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think their timing is they're pretty much, that's why they're going to be dead in the water. Because, I mean, by the time RIM comes out with BlackBerry 10 and their phones, they're going to be up against the new version of the iPhone, the newest Android devices, and Windows Phone 8. Before, Windows Phone 7 was this kind of, yeah, it's kind of there, that's cute, that's nice. But Windows Phone 8 is what Microsoft wanted to have in the first place, and now they have it. They're going to have really great spec'd phones and everything, but they also have the enterprise functions that could take away the RIM market. And that's where if RIM came out with this stuff last year, like they were supposed to when they introduced it, instead of saying it'll be out in November of next year and you won't be able to get your BlackBerry 7 devices will not be upgradable, so don't buy our phones now. And if there's a security breach, you'll be happy to be with BlackBerry. I mean, they don't have a whole lot of selling points anymore, especially if corporations move to the bring your own device system, because BlackBerry is just kind of, there's too much competition right now.
I imagine there's like two cruise ships, one Android, one iOS, and then Windows Phone and RIM are in a rowboat, and one's about to eat the other. And I think we know who it is. Peter, is that unfair?
No, I don't think that RIM has a lot of good options, right? I mean, I think the things that they were good at, which was driving sales of their phones, was they had a really great keyboard for when people really cared mostly about email messaging. And we've seen that the things that people look for in a smartphone, that list of things has broadened. It's not that messaging and email is not important. It's that they've added a whole lot of other things to that list of stuff they look for, like a great camera, great web browser, apps, you know, music player, video, all that stuff. And then you take away the fact that the whole security, you know, like Sarah was talking about, like the stuff that CIOs care about in terms of security things that is being changed by the whole bring your own device market and people being able to, you know, securely use an Android device or an iPhone or a Windows phone or whatever. And so, you know, if RIM had any expertise in designing world-class operating systems or really great UIs or things like that, I would maybe have some hope for them. And I know that they've acquired some stuff to help them with that, like Unix and I can't remember that UI company, that Swedish company they bought. You know, I just don't see any evidence that they're going to be able to pull this off. What was really interesting is that one of the co-CEOs that they fired, I can't remember which one it was, had a proposal which the board didn't accept, which was that they were going to focus on doing this, focus on really low-end devices and using, you know, BlackBerry's infrastructure to deliver data to feature phones and low-end smartphones really efficiently so that you could bring basically data plans to people who couldn't afford them right now. And it was sort of an interesting approach to, you know, the problem. It might not have saved the company, but it might have bought them some time.
Yeah, you see a lot of companies eyeballing the feature phone market, trying to come up with like low-end smartphones, ways to sell cheaper phones to that market. That's a huge market in lots of places in the world. And that sounded like a good idea. We also got an email from Neil who says that tech departments just have a tendency to trust Microsoft. He kind of thinks, like Ars Technica, that Microsoft's probably going to eat RIM's lunch. And Neil says, if BlackBerry really wants to save themselves, they should sell out their server technology to Microsoft in a buyout and sell their keyboard hardware to the feature phone quick messaging arm of Nokia and Samsung and their tablet tech to Amazon. Three sales for one company wouldn't be bad as bankruptcy and selling out for patents. It's a little dire, but all of those make sense.
I would think they're more likely to be acquired as a whole, kind of like Palm. And I don't want to say what happened to Palm there, but I mean, there's always another electronics company out there that's thinking about how can we get into the market of phones? And Dell's one of those companies that's tried and failed numerous times. And I still think they're actually probably a good fit because that kind of structure, the enterprise structure with RIM and Dell seems like that would be a good fit if RIM continues to do what they're doing on their own.
I think the problem is that RIM is just not that valuable anymore. It's not that they don't sell a lot of phones because they still do, right? And it's not that they don't have some great patents because they obviously do. And it's not that their server, you know, stuff isn't valuable. It's that the value of all those things, all those assets are declining, except maybe the patent stuff. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them to find a buyer who's going to be willing to pay a premium over what the market values them at right now. And the other factor is that, you know, who can buy them is going to be limited. It's like, let's say like Huawei wanted to buy them. It's hard to imagine that not being blocked by the government. There's a lot of security. I mean, and the other things, do you want a corporation partly owned by the Chinese government, you know, to have access to all the BlackBerry, you know, server backend stuff?
The security backend. Yeah. There's huge questions there for sure.
Maybe that sale would go through, but then everybody would switch. Yeah. Right. And there's no company.
Well, let's brighten things up and talk about takedown notices, which actually by comparison is sort of bright. Remember that 56-page roadmap of the so-called Xbox 720 we were talking about earlier this week? I'm guessing it's real because ined.cz, or I don't know how you pronounce it, ihned.cz in the Czech Republic, received a copyright-related takedown notice from Alan Radford on behalf of Microsoft for that 56-page document and public links to the file. And in Dropbox, now give the message no longer available due to a takedown request under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act by Microsoft. So Dropbox blocking links to that 56-page document as well. Previously, if you don't remember, Covington and Burling had the doc taken down from Scribd, and Microsoft has a pattern of issuing takedown notices. In that Google Transparency report, they had taken down 448,236, well, they had requested that many URLs be removed from the Google search engine. So they're active in this space. two questions here. One is, does this pretty much confirm that that document was at least a true planning document? Not everything may come true, but that there must be an authentic document or they wouldn't be going to all this trouble, right?
Not true. Not true at all.
Okay. Actually, tell me why.
No. Because they are smart enough about how this stuff works now that they will send a cease and desist to take down fake documents just to throw people off.
So they look at it and they're like, well, it uses our trademarks. So we'll go after it and everybody will think it's true, but it won't be. They actually did a really good job keeping the secret of the Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, look, whether or not it's true, I don't know. There's some stuff that seems a little outdated in that document. So, you know, it's possible that they've changed things a lot since then and it was real. It's possible that it's fake and they're having it taken down just to kind of mess with people. I've certainly seen that before. I've seen lots of companies do a lot of misdirection here. And, you know, just think about how many fake rumors were just out just with the Surface, right? Just last week, people were saying, oh, it's going to be a Barnes & Noble tablet.
Right.
That was basically fake stuff put out there to throw people off.
And even if it wasn't fake, it's like if Microsoft would have just been like, eh, we're not going to bother with this, then everyone would assume it's true. So even if Microsoft wasn't like, hey, let's throw people off the, you know, the real trail, it almost seems like no matter if the rumors are real or fake, they have to issue takedown notices just to make sure that people then don't go down the wrong path thinking that this is all real, even though, as you said, Pete, some of the stuff doesn't really ring like it would be true anyway.
Well, I mean, this document, I mean, Microsoft might be secretive right now, but this document was what dated, at least on the 56-page thing, was from August 2010. So if it took 2 years for it to leak, well, maybe it was real. I mean, the thing is, the plans don't sound that crazy considering how long the cycle is for Xbox 360. This could just also be like a viral thing as far as Microsoft's concerned. Forget it being real or not. It's like we're talking about the 720. We're waiting for next year anyway. A lot of us are for the next console. And it has some really interesting ideas of where Microsoft would go with those glasses and Blu-ray support. And this, maybe it's even a feeler. Like, hey, would you guys want Blu-ray support?
Would you
want this? Yeah, because sometimes
the Blu-ray support alone seems really suspicious to me. I mean, that just doesn't seem like something that they would do. But why? What advantage? I mean, there's no reason for Microsoft to add Blu-ray support, really.
If the only thing they're
trying to get rid of the disc drive entirely.
The only advantage I can see the Blu-ray support is simply saying we have the one box you need, and that's what PS3 can say at certain times. And I mean, basically, it's a PC, and Microsoft does support either one. They don't really care. They were a part of the HD DVD camp, but they never included that or integrated that into the console. They always had it as a secondary thing. And a lot of the rumors were, would they ever come out with a Blu-ray support? If that's the winner, it's no different than them having a DVD drive. It's like, what's the difference? That's the optical media of the day, has a lot of gigabytes, and if you don't have the fast internet connection, you don't want to have a multiple disc experience. Why not just go with the Blu-ray? Because they don't have to reinvent their own standard.
It's plausible, but I think that they are. I think there's a growing sentiment within Microsoft that they don't want to keep supporting the disc-based delivery of content.
And maybe 2 years ago, they were still considering it. That could be possible. I think we can all agree on one thing, though. Microsoft is not going to call the next Xbox the 720, are they?
I doubt it.
That's even if this is true, it's just a working title.
Well, you know why they called it the 360 in the first place, right?
Yes.
Because they were worried about the PS3 coming out and the Xbox 2 seeming a generation behind the Xbox, the PS3, right? So they're like, well, we'll just call it
360.
Yeah.
And the 720 name has been floating around for a while because Microsoft was like a sponsor in some movie called Real Steel. And in the future, there's in this giant stadium, you see Xbox 720 with the branding of Microsoft. And they were on board with that. So that's why people are like, maybe they will call it that because they paid for that placement. But
I think it's going to be called the Windows Entertainment
Box.
720p
sounds to me like, oh, it's the, you know, it's the one before 1080p. I mean, the name 720 now doesn't sound like the best.
I got it. It's going to be Xbox 8. Everything is 8. Windows Phone 8. They jumped ahead of the PS4 by two, right? A factor of two. Xbox 8.
Windows Entertainment 8.
In a box.
That actually is probably the most accurate of all of them.
Or that Xbox Metro about, or something like that.
Xbox Metro.
Xbox Metro is actually probably not a bad guess.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsors.
Someone check and see if that's registered, XboxMetro.com.
Do a quick search, chat room. Thanks to Gazelle for sponsoring this show. If you're wanting to save up for all these new gadgets we're always talking about, you want to get rid of your old gadgets and get some money out of them. And the easiest way to do it, if you're lazy like me and you don't even want to get up out of your chair practically, sell your used iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, your Mac, or your smartphone on Gazelle. I've done it a bunch of times this summer, clearing out the garage, getting cash the easy way, and trade up to new gadgets. Go to gazelle.com, get a risk-free quote today. It's good for 30 days. Do it today because gadgets don't get more valuable over time unless it's the Apple One. You have to wait like 30 years for that. You don't have time for that. Go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Here's why you want to use Gazelle instead of doing it some other way. You put in the product name. You tell them what condition it is, what cables you got. They give you a quote. It's locked in for 30 days. You got 30 days to get them the product, and you don't have to do anything else. They'll send you the label. You print it up. You put it on the box. You drop it off. It's sent to them. They send you the money. They can send it to you by PayPal. They can send it to you by check, or they can send you. You get 5% more if you choose an Amazon gift certificate. Remember, just like when you drive a car off the lot, gadgets do not get more valuable over time. Find out what your gadget is worth. Just take a minute. Go to gazelle.com. Lock in that price. Then you can decide to send it in and get the cash. It's really easy. Visit gazelle.com for your risk-free quote today. So what's up with the Google Play developers
world
system here? They're allowing developers to talk back to critical reviews.
Right, Google,
actually, any review.
Google right now is allowing top developers, and they're deciding who's a top developer or not, to directly respond to user reviews in the Google Play Store in a threaded view. So, like, if
is that going to be a reality show? America's top developer?
I don't believe that'll be the case.
Watch that.
It'll be on the YouTube channel of somewhere, I'm sure, if they need some extra content for some reason on YouTube. But here's the thing. Obviously, this is something that's not available on Apple's App Store. If you had previous editions, you either be doing this on a user forum, or you would have the developer's comments kind of just lost in that string of commentary. This allows the developers to have a direct response, and that way it'll stay at the top of these comments. Now the question is whether this is actually going to be helpful for developers to come to the Android market. Are they going to go to Google Play first because they can control a little bit better how people see the reviews, or is this just this nice little extra?
I actually really like this. I sort of liken this to when people give either Yelp reviews or maybe TripAdvisor reviews, and the person who owns the restaurant or, you know, is running the B&B will respond. And sometimes they're responding to a positive review, like, thank you so much. We also enjoyed meeting you. We're, you know, happy to have you again. And sometimes they're responding to something negative and either will kind of set that person straight, you know, like if you give me a bad review, it's like, what the heck just happened? Or it's like, here's actually a little bit of better explanation of why we had a miscommunication. And I find that stuff really helpful in context. And it also can put a developer in a positive light when you say, you know, this person's being really reasonable. And maybe they give me some good reasons why this feature isn't available. And they have an opportunity to say when some features are, you know, going to be coming down the pipeline if you're not necessarily reading that in the dev notes. So communication seems good to me as a whole.
I think this is a kind of a big deal for developers just in the sense of maybe increasing attention of their app in the Google Play Store. For example, if you know you have a certain number of people that are giving you a bad review in comments right now and the developer cannot kind of ping them to notify them, hey, this, you know, this is why that's happening, or this is in the works or whatever, or we fixed it. I think a lot of times people will rate an app based on their first like 5 or 10 minutes experience with it. And a lot of times it's probably lower than maybe it would be, you know, down the line when an update comes and fixes it. People don't often remember to go back in there and change their rating. But if developers have the ability to kind of get in touch with them and kind of rectify it there, or, you know, keep in touch, that kind of spurs them to possibly change their rating. And that's obviously that's better for developers completely. I feel like we heard this news earlier than now. I feel like I heard about this like a week ago. Maybe it was just rumored that it was going to happen and not
and
that it had rolled out.
All right. Matt 3, by the way, in the chat room says XboxMetro.com is taken, but Xbox-Metro.com was available. 5 minutes ago.
Of course it was.
Probably gone now. Let's talk about this new Sony development that wants to eliminate screen reflection. I absolutely hate screen reflection. It's the worst on the iPad, but it's a problem with all the devices that I use. And this looks like it might really eliminate screen reflection. This is pretty crazy.
Yeah, so that's, you know, Tom, I completely agree with you, although I love my iPad and, you know, it's great for reading. It's terrible for outdoors, and so are my laptops, honestly, because they have glossy screens, and that's why people love e-paper and Kindles so much, and that's kind of why Amazon makes commercials about being by the pool and being able to read your Kindle. At the Society for Information Display, which is also called the SID conference, Sony demonstrated their answer to this. It's a combination of conductive film and low reflective film that's supposed to make screen reflection pretty much non-existent in devices like smartphones and tablets and all those devices that you love but you don't like to use outside or any place where there's too much of a reflection for you to be able to read anything, you know, or see anything on your screen. So there's actually an image from the show, and the top image is the traditional conductive film, kind of how it works. So you see, hey, you can see the image there on the right, but it's hard to see. There's a lot of reflection. It's hard on the eyes. The middle image shows off how conductive film is evolving. So it's better. It's certainly better, but it's not perfect.
Well, in this one, you've got different layers with different refractive indexes. So it just kind of slows the light down, but it doesn't eliminate the reflection.
Yes, exactly. The bottom is the new conductive film that Sony is touting. It has something called a moth eye low reflective film. The key to why this looks so much better is that the key is providing an uneven surface. So you have a lot of little tiny bumps that you can't see. The naked eye can't see. But what it does is it covers the entire film, and it means that light isn't bouncing back off the screen on one plane. It's bouncing in a bunch of different directions, and it makes it a lot easier for you to see. It creates a lot less reflection.
So the reflection happens. It just gets scattered away from your eyes. And the light that's coming up from the bottom doesn't get changed. It goes straight.
Exactly, because your eye couldn't possibly be looking in all these different directions of an uneven surface. So without actually having to do a whole lot at all, they're pretty much eliminating the problem, at least eliminating 90% of the problem.
But it's not just a matte screen. Like, this is actually a somewhat glossy-looking screen is the idea. Because, I mean, we have matte screens. They're not that reflective. This is supposed to be much less reflective than even the matte screens we're used to today.
Yeah, exactly. OCA, which means optical clear adhesive, is kind of the standard, and that's the gap between display and its touch panel. So it cuts down on reflections. Sony says what low reflective film does, that what it has put together, just does just as good a job as OCA in cutting reflections. But says, hey, listen, if a device already has that built in, our technology can work on top of that if required, which is great, which would only help it. Now, of course, I was reading this early and I was thinking, this is so great. This is actually something that I really want. It really means something to me. Let's see. How would it equate to, let's say, the new Retina display MacBook Pro? Because, of course, we all heard not only is the Retina display really beautiful, but they've cut down on a lot of glare if you look at it from the side and if you're, you know, outside or whatever. And anybody who uses a glossy MacBook Pro, unless you've got, I don't know, superhuman eyes, knows that it can be a really huge pain to use and really annoying when there's a lot of glare. So the MacBook Pro has two sheets of glass layers that are of different sizes. You may have heard this explained at the keynote when they were showing it off. And they pretty much just leave off the third layer of cover glass, which is glossy, that adds gloss to other models. And that's actually something that's left off in the MacBook Air, for example. So this is totally beyond that. The Apple is kind of, it's almost like they're doing what they can with the technology that they already had. And Sony is saying, hey, we've actually got a whole nother approach to this, which makes a lot more sense.
Of course, Apple's shipping a product with that. This is being shown off at a display convention. This is not shipping anytime soon.
Absolutely. But it's something that, hey, if manufacturers can build this into what they're already shipping with this optical clear adhesive technology that it's kind of pretty much a standard. And Pete, you probably have an opinion about all of this, but to me, I say bring it on. Less glare is good. Good for the eyes.
Yeah, the question I have is how much is it going to impact the this specific Sony technology, the brightness of the screen? Because you know, it's not, there's sort of this tension, right, between brightness and reflectivity that you get from a glossy display, which can actually make the which they use because it makes it somewhat easier to have a whiter white, which is brighter. It's very technical how this stuff works, right? You know, I'm actually in the market for a new TV right now, and I have a matte screen on my LCD TV right now, and it's great, but the brightness is not as good as it could be. So I'm thinking about, you know, getting, and the black levels are not that great, so because it's a 7-year-old TV, so I'm looking for a new TV. And most of the really nice LCD panels are glossy, right? Which is nice, except that if you watch TV during the day, you know, you get that that high reflection.
You can see your own reactions to what's happening on the show.
Which is a real problem in my living room. So I'm a little torn because the TV that I really want to buy has a really glossy panel, and I cannot bring myself to pull the trigger on it because of the reflection.
And someone in the chat room asked about light transmission with this technology, and I didn't see them say anything about that in the stuff I read. Now, presumably that means it doesn't affect it, or they don't want to admit that it affects it. But that is going to, we want to know, if we're going to put this in TVs, we definitely want to know what black levels are going to look like, what white levels are going to look like.
Yeah, that stuff's really important. Yeah. Someone just said go with plasma. I'm looking at plasma too. But the problem with plasma has its own issues, and it generates a lot of heat, and it's a pretty small room, so you would actually probably notice.
It'll be great in the winter, though.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of TVs, we've got good and bad news for the TV industry.
Well, I'll go with the bad news first so the good news sounds all right. Okay, so NPD had NPD Display Research showed TV shipments were down worldwide 8% compared to Q1 of 2011, with LCD shipments down 3%. That's the first time it's fallen. LCD TV shipments have fallen for the first time ever. Now, LCDs take up almost 85% of the TV market ownership. CRTs are second, because who has a CRT? And plasmas are under 6%. So if Pete bought a plasma, he'd be part of the 6%. Samsung was the only TV maker to see shipments increase at all, which has 26% of the worldwide TV market. But the TV market might be, or the panel market might be changing, because there's a report saying that Sharp, like I've said in the news views, is delivering panels to Foxconn for the new Apple TV that could show up as early as this year. But the real question is, what's going to give that shot in the arm to the TV market? Okay, we've had color, HD, 3D, smart TV. We had gestures and voice. Now I think LG has that available. We have all kinds of set-top boxes that can make your television do more things. What on
4K.
Earth? 4K. More res?
OLED!
What do you think, Pete?
You know, I mean, it's going to be a few years, but I would love to see, you know, us starting to take the upgrade to 4K. You know, I think they're going to broadcast the Olympics in 4K to Tokyo, maybe.
Yeah, and I think YouTube might be streaming it in 4K.
I think YouTube does. Actually, I think YouTube technically is a slightly different resolution than what is strictly 4K.
Okay.
But they do have that higher than 1080p resolution that they do offer. So, you know, it's the problem is, like, it's a little bit like, you know, if you don't have the content, people aren't going to buy the TVs. And if you don't have the TVs, people aren't going to put the content out there in 4K. So, you know, I think that the transition is going to be even slower than the transition that we saw to HD, which took way longer than it should have. But, you know, if you really want people to buy new TVs, you got to give them something that's going to really jump up the quality of their picture. And 4K is going to be one way to do that. You know, I think just having, like, better black levels or higher contrast ratios or whatever is not enough. You know, I think people would probably buy a new Apple TV, but that's not necessarily going to be about the picture quality. It's going to be about the content delivery.
The service, yeah.
The service. And there's a whole host of issues there with what they're trying to do from what I've been hearing from sources, that is extremely complicated and might leave some people very dissatisfied with what they're trying to pull off. But, you know, I think the thing is, like, it's HD is a mature technology. If you think about how long it's been in the market now, and there isn't, you know, a big reason for people to upgrade like they did 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to wrap my head around what Apple could possibly do this year to get people to change their television. They couldn't go to 4K because there's not enough content.
They're not going to do 4K.
Right, that'd be impossible. And the other thing is, if they had the content deal, like that's what is that really what's going to make their TV different? This is the TV that comes with content. That's going to be the push. I mean, that would definitely be a unique proposition, but that would.
Okay, do you know what they're trying to do?
I thought they were trying to get basically channels on demand through apps.
No, that's part of it. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to do in a way what Google tried to do with Google TV, which is to have the TV actually control the cable box or the satellite TV box, and have Apple's interface be the interface you use to access all that content.
So you've got Comcast or DirecTV, and it doesn't matter because it's all in the Apple interface.
Yeah. So the problem is Comcast is not stupid enough to let them do that. And if you're Comcast, you're like, well, I don't need you. I have, they're not seeing enough churn or loss in subscribers to justify, giving Apple, letting Apple get in the way of that relationship. And the problem is that the cable, market is not at all like the wireless market. You basically have these regional monopolies, and a lot of people don't have much choice when it comes to their TV provider. And it's basically either satellite or cable. And for a lot of people, satellite's not an option. Like, I can't get satellite where I live because I live in an apartment building. Apple, from what I understand, is trying to pick off the weakest,
Bright House and
the weakest. Well, not cable. I think they're trying to pick off Dish. Trying to get Dish to sign off on this. And you could imagine a situation where, a box that a Dish box that Apple could basically control and completely overlay its interface, with, incorporating a really amazing gesture-based, Siri-based UI and integrating a bunch of online content. People might say, well, I'm going to switch to that from DirecTV just to get that, or I'm going to leave Comcast to get that. The problem is, how do they reproduce this, in every market that they want to be in? Because every market is different when it comes to TV, and it's very complicated. And so this is really the hard part of it. It's like Apple can make a TV, they can have Sharp do the panels, they can make a beautiful TV, whatever, they can have Siri in it. But the way that you get the content on there is very complicated. And it's like, if it's not going to be significantly different or better than what they already do with the Apple TV box that they sell for $100, I just, it's going to be a real challenge. And I think that they want to do something more significant than that. And the people that control, the satellite and cable providers are just, they don't want to end up being just, a dumb pipe and for Apple. They don't want to have what's happened with the iPhone happen to them.
And Apple's pattern here is usually, if we can just get one person to go along, one big company to go along, then we can force everyone else to go along later on because everyone will want Apple.
That's what they're hoping for, yeah. So I know that they've been working really – from what I've been hearing, they've been working very hard to get somebody to bite, and that's basically what's taking so long.
Just don't care anymore, man. They're just out there like, screw you, AMC. Yeah, we're going to put Slingbox and everything. They might be crazy enough to partner. Who knows?
This would auto-hop an Apple. Wow.
But you remember, it's like, if you go back, the original Google TV, it did have that sort of direct link to the Dish, to control a Dish box.
I actually have my Google TV hooked up with a DirecTV box, and it controls it through an IR blaster.
Yeah, but with Dish, it wasn't through the IR blaster. It was actually a cable would connect the two boxes.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Google TV would connect, it would control it directly.
Interesting. Yeah.
It just didn't go anywhere.
I don't know. This is sounding interestinger and interestinger. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Carbonite Online Backup. Are your computer files backed up? Because you're in danger. You really are. Your data is in danger. You're not in danger. Your health is fine. You're going to live forever. But your computer files could go away if they're not properly backed up. I believe in having a local backup as well as a cloud backup. Because you can get a virus no matter how careful you are. There can be fire. There can be theft. And to really be protected, you need online backup. Carbonite gives your files automatic and continual backup. They're stored safely offsite, and after you have a computer disaster, it's easy to restore them. Plus, you can access your backup files privately on any computer, on your smartphone, or your iPad with a free app from Carbonite. So you get a side benefit of portability of your files as well. Unlimited backup for your PC or Mac. You might think, oh, this is going to be a really expensive service. I know I need it, but how much I got to fork out? $59 a year. A year. For the whole year, $59. Try it for free, though. You don't even have to pay anything to try it. Go to Carbonite.com, enter the offer code TNT. You'll get 2 bonus months free if you decide to buy with the offer code TNT. So be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage to get that 2 months free. No credit card required for the free trial, though. That's carbonite.com. Offer code TNT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. What's on the calendar, Sarah?
Well, we've got some good 4G news. Australia is expected to auction off 700 megahertz and 2.5 gigahertz wireless frequencies as soon as April 2013, which is going to be sort of a slow march to countrywide 4G service. But at least a 700 megahertz band will support U.S. bought devices. Meanwhile, in the U.K., I guess I can say, meanwhile, here in the U.K., provider Everything Everywhere says it's not actually interested in suing regulator Ofcom, as has been accused of not only Everything Everywhere, but other carriers previously. So it sounds like a little bit of a squabble might be squelched, and 4G may be a reality here as well. Meanwhile, in other calendar news, some Galaxy S3 pre-orders from AT&T are going to be delayed until Monday, June 25th. Hey, it's a popular phone. The song gets hotter, depending on who you're actually ordering the phone through. And finally, Belkin's first 802.11ac routers will be available at the end of June, starting at $140. See, I'm all international now. Everything's in perspective. It's all U.S. dollars.
You're a woman of the world, Sarah Lane.
That's right. Yes, yes. A world-weary woman.
Let's finish up with what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail to 260-TNT-SHOW from Liam with a tip for Verizon users in the U.S.
Hey guys, it's Liam from New York. You guys mentioned about the end of the summer being the last time to upgrade with Verizon to keep your unlimited data. Cutoff date is June 28th, but you can still pre-order VS3 and have it count even though it doesn't ship until the 10th according to Verizon. That's what I did. All right, thanks. You guys are great. Have a great day.
I honestly did not believe you, Liam. I was like, there's no way that's going to work. But it works.
Yeah, I checked on CNET. Jason independently confirmed it. Yeah,
a few articles written up about it, too. Yeah.
Because unlimited data, and that's an awesome phone. So you want to put them together.
So you can still get unlimited data with a Galaxy S3. Then once you get it, go enter that gadget at gadget.com, gdgt.com. Pete's going to tell you a little bit more about that in a second. I want to thank our subreddit today, too. Technewstoday.reddit.com is the place to go. If you want to tell us what stories we should talk about on the show, vote them up or down, submit them there. It's one of the places we go to figure out what we're going to talk about each and every day. So, Peter, how are things going at Gadget? You guys got a New York event coming up, right?
Yeah, we're doing a big event on Monday here in New York City. It starts at 7 p.m. on this coming Monday. It's events.gdgt.com if you want to find out more information and RSVP for it. It's going to be pretty awesome. We're going to have like 50 different companies showing off new gadgets and tons of giveaways. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think this is our fourth New York event. We do them all over the country, and they've been really successful.
Yeah, you all are really good at getting companies that are not just there trying to push stuff on you, but have interesting things to show off. I've seen a lot of things for the first time at Gadget events.
Yeah, and you know what I really like about it is that nobody really does events that are meant for just regular people, like consumers. Everyone does like press events and like, you know, just for the bloggers or just for journalists. But I wanted to do something, especially because like, you know, the whole point of our site is that we're reviews and recommendations, right? And we take, you know, we do aggregate reviews from around the web, kind of like a Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes. But then we also have our user reviews, which we, you know, are a big part of the site. And I wanted an event that like, you know, regular users like who are just really excited about this stuff could come and like check stuff out. I think that sort of you shouldn't have to be like a journalist to be able to get access to this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff what you guys are doing. Check it out, gdgt.com, folks. If you're into gadgets at all, you need to take a look at this site if you don't already. That's it for this edition of Tech News Today. You'll find us up on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. I'll be from Utah tomorrow to keep the international flavor going. Sarah will still be in London, and Darren Kitchen will be right here in Petaluma. We'll see you then.